The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn
Beck. Progressivism is a disease, I think. It's a disease of the mind that once it takes hold, it's over for you. Canada, I believe, is terminally ill with progressivism now. The U.S. prognosis is really a critical condition ourselves. Canada's Senate approved changing a line in their English version of their national anthem, O Canada. They wanted to make it gender neutral. The second line of the anthem will now be true patriot, love in all of us command, rather than the oppressive and insanely offensive old version, true patriot, love in all thy sons command. Oh. So now that their anthem isn't sexist anymore, and I am not kidding you, I am not kidding you, in Sweden, the lions, okay, on their shield, I'm trying to think of a way to say this, the lions on their shield, their crest of their country, which is I don't know how many centuries old, they have these lions on the shield and it's easy to paint. It's harder to do it with sculpture, but they actually did it. They carved, they went and they painted over, or they took a chisel and knocked the genitals off of all of the lions because women said it was oppressive. Look it up. Canadians, now that you're not sexist anymore, feel free to sing your national anthem at any time. Somehow I doubt that the Canadian senators checked with the people. Because that's not the way progressives operate. They just do it. Most Canadians, I would bet, preferred leaving the anthem alone. You know, they've had a song that way for over a century. Nobody is dying because of sexism over the stupid national anthem. This is why we didn't have a national anthem until FDR. Canadian feminist author Margaret Atwood was one of the people behind this effort. Now, she wrote the novel The Handmaid's Tale. You know, you can look that one up for insight into her feelings on tradition and faith and, you know, conservatives. She's very, very subtle. But I will tell you, I've defended her recently because she said enough of the Me Too movement. This is getting dangerous. Even she has some common sense. She's the one that, you know, got them to remove this offensive line. This is the dark side of progressivism everywhere. It presumes to know what is best for you. But it's always the agenda of a very few, forced on the majority. Sometimes the agenda or feelings of just one individual. That's when it becomes a dictatorship. But that's where everybody is headed. I mean, the world over. Progressivism claims to say, we're going, what? We're more free. Are we? We're more free now because you're forcing us to live a life that you agree with. You're forcing me to say the things that I may not agree with. That's more free? Yes, we're more free and more healthy. That's what brings Michelle Obama dictating what your local school, what your cafeteria has to serve. Or a mother in Webster Parish, Louisiana, who got student-led prayer banned from her daughter's high school. Wasn't a problem with anybody. It was a problem with her. Well, now you can't do it. Respect for tradition as a stabilizing, enriching agent in society is one of the key diverging points of the left and the right in the U.S., and decades of progressivism chipping away at the things like religion, the flag, the Constitution, patriotism in general, all the way to the last president's apology tour. It has created an enormous backlash from heartland Americans on both the left and the right, to the point where a whole section of Trump's State of the Union speech was a lecture on respecting the flag, respecting the anthem, respecting the motto, respecting our traditions. It's sad that we have sunk so low that the State of Union has to be turned into a stinking prep rally. Nothing like going to those pep rallies. And we did it. We were USA. We USA. USA. Go Bulldogs. We were a pep rally. That's it. It's easy to laugh at the Canadians for wimping out on the national anthem. But look out. Progressivism is a persistent and progressive disease. Don't think that it can't happen here.
It's Monday, February 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, last hour I talked a little bit about arrogance. Self-hating egomaniacs. And we either believe the worst in ourselves, or we believe that we are just, there's nothing can conquer us. As people, we're either the best or the worst. And sometimes that combination gets really dangerous when the worst people begin to believe they're the best. And quite honestly, it usually happens because they want to fit in. Individuals want to fit into a group. It's really hard not to be popular. I mean, it's so much easier. It really is. It's so much easier to be popular. Just go along with the crowd. What? Just go along with the crowd. Standing up for something, standing against something, that's really difficult. And you would think that, you know, the people who have been forced to live their life in a closet for whatever reason, you would think that they would be the first to say, hey, let's not shove other people in the closet. You would think that with the arrogance of the press, that they would remember what made them arrogant. It was their successes. Okay, what were your successes? Well, we exposed what? You exposed what? You exposed people of going wrong. But here's what the press believes. They expose a party for going wrong. They expose one ideology for going wrong. To watch the press bend over backwards over something that is really quite simple. And when I say press, I mean press on both sides. I heard people on the right say that everybody needs to be, this whole thing needs to be dismissed. There's nothing to Carter Page. There's nothing to Flynn. There's nothing to Manafort. Hold on just a second. Wait a minute. I don't get that from that memo. What I get from that memo is the government has gone wrong. What I get from the memo, if it is accurate, is that the government has become so arrogant and they are so in bed with the press and the left that they believe that they can get away with anything. That they can go to a FISA court, a secret court, and leave really important things out and no one will care. And the press is so arrogant that they just don't think that their side could ever do it. They're so blind. Have they watched their own movie, The Washington Post? If you haven't seen that movie, you should. It's really good. And it's really, I think it's really fair. The Tom Hanks character is there like, holy cow, Jack Kennedy. I thought Jack Kennedy was a friend. No, he wasn't a friend. As it points out in the movie, he was keeping the people that could make his life and excuse him of a lot of things very close. That's what happened, Bill Bradley. That's what happened. And he figured that out in the movie. But apparently the people in the press don't get that. Why? Because they have an agenda. So the Washington Post, they expose all the president's men. They expose Watergate. And what was Watergate? Watergate was not about a break-in. It was about spying on your competition and then using that information and trying to twist it and use it in the press. Then, after the breakout, break-in was discovered, then it was about the president instructing the FBI and Justice Department to go rogue and start to use resources to obstruct justice to make sure that this was all covered up. It was the cover-up that was the problem. Now, I don't know about you, but boy, man, a lot of this sounds familiar. What is this really about? It's about Russia trying to get information and then using that information in the press to affect the society, to get us all to not believe in the Democrats or the Republicans and to start fighting against each other. And did the FBI and the DOJ do exactly what they were doing in Watergate? Now, if you listen to any of the pundits this weekend, absolutely not. That's not possible. How could you possibly say that? Well, I don't know. It's happened before. What makes you so sure it's not happening now? I mean, I want the facts. I don't want all of this. I don't want people drawing conclusions on what's true because I don't know what's true yet. But I know it's true in the past. Our founders knew the First Amendment had to be protected. But that halo of justice that the press gets, man, it's a little tarnished. Let's just put this in the best terms. Journalists, even the very best, are human. In 1980, the same Washington Post, with the same editor, Ben Bradley, he wanted to expand the readership of the Post into the black community. And so the paper made an effort to hire more minority journalists. One of them, her name was Janet Cook. She was a black female reporter from Ohio. She was an aggressive reporter. She was a good writer. She was a fast rising star. The Washington Post was in its heyday. And it had a very competitive environment. And she really wanted to break a big story and win a Pulitzer Prize. So she went. She was asked to write a story about DC's growing heroin problem. And she thought, this is great. I'm going to win a Pulitzer on this one. So she went into the inner city of DC. She went to the places where heroin, the epidemic at the time, was the worst. And she learned that she was, you know, that there were children were heroin addicts, and she was appalled by this. And then she found a little boy, 8 years old, heroin addict. His name was Jimmy. And she knew she had her hook. She could see the Pulitzer. She wrote her feature story called Jimmy's World. And it blew away all of the editors at the Post. Bob Woodward, who is then the assistant managing editor. He's the guy who said, this got to be a front page story. Quoting, Jimmy is an 8-year-old and a third generation heroin addict. Precocious little boy with sandy hair, velvety brown eyes, and needle marks freckling the baby smooth skin of his thin brown arms. He nestles in a large beige reclining chair in the living room of his comfortably furnished home in southeast Washington. There's almost a cherubic expression on his small round face as he talks about life and clothes and money, the Baltimore O's, and heroin. He's been addicted since the age of 5. The readers were hooked and appalled and saddened. The mayor's office instructed the police, we've got to get this boy medical treatment. But Jimmy had disappeared, gone underground. No one knew where he was. Cook said, Ben, you don't understand. I promised them anonymity. I promised them that this wouldn't happen, and now it has, and they've gotten out. Also, Mom's boyfriend had threatened, you know, the boy's life if they discovered his whereabouts, because he's not going to prison. People were even more outraged now what was going to happen to Jimmy. A few months later, Cook had her dream. She won her Pulitzer Prize for feature writing. She had to submit some autobiographical information to the prize committee, but there was a slight snag there. The committee contacted the Post when they couldn't verify that Cook had graduated from Vassar College, magna cum laude. Turns out she only attended Vassar her freshman year. She actually graduated from the University of Toledo with a BA degree, not with a master's degree, as she told the Pulitzer Committee. So they called her in for an explanation. Unfortunately for her, the Washington Post had some real problems, and they knew they were brewing here because her resume lies were the least of her lies. After hours of grilling, she finally confessed that Jimmy's world was entirely made up. The little sandy brown-haired boy with big, beautiful eyes, needle marks on his arms. None of that was true. So here's the Washington Post, the paper that uncovered Watergate, the biggest political scandal in American history. They failed to even vet her resume. It published a front page Pulitzer Prize winning feature story that was 100% made up, and nobody caught it. Well, that can't happen. How could the same place produce a golden standard of journalism during Watergate and the worst case scenario of journalism with Jimmy's world? The answer is we're all human. We're all human. Remarkably, neither Ben Bradley or Bob Woodward resigned over the incident. This is a different time. And maybe the All the President's Men halo, maybe that helped save them. I tell you this story not to say, see, it's all fake news, because it's not. We have to get past this idea that one side of the aisle's news is always false. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's true in the newspapers. Sometimes it's true about the journalists. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's true about the government. Sometimes it's not. But we know this. If there isn't someone standing guard that says, you know what, I'm going to vet that. You know, hang on just a second. I'm just not going to go, you're my friend and I love you and everything, but I got to do my job. That's something that's not right here. Journalists, do your damn job. And America will be a better place for it.
Back.
All right, coming up in a second, we're gonna take on the Super Bowl. It was like living in a parallel universe. The game was good and the commercials sucked. The Patriots lost and the Eagles won. No, I mean, what happened? It's not the way it's supposed to work out. We'll talk a little bit about that and the messages that we found in the commercials that I think are interesting this year. And the game itself coming up in just a second.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck program.
What kind of parallel universe do we live in? Where the game is really good and exciting, the commercials mm-hmm. are bad, halftime is good and non-controversial, mm-hmm. The Patriots lose and the Eagles win. Oh, and a dead guy did a duet during the halftime.
Which people are upset by.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Prince is deity. Okay.
I think he said that he didn't want that.
He was a popular pop star who died of an overdose. he didn't want the duet thing being done, but it's sort of not what he did. He just projected him on a big sheet.
He sang with him.
Right. I thought it was great.
That's a duet. I loved it.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing because how did the Prince estate lose control of that?
Yeah.
So they couldn't stop it. And Martin Luther King with that Dodge Ram commercial, his family, you know this,
Pat. If there's anybody that they should be pissed off at, it's them. It's the King family.
Yeah.
They're the ones who okayed it.
They sold it.
Right.
Yeah. Or at least okayed it.
They made money from that. They made a lot of money. They made a lot of money from that.
I refuse to hear that.
Yeah, well, it's true. A lot of people do refuse to hear it, but they need to.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it's not Dodge you should be pissed off at. It's the King family.
So did you see that they had to grease? They actually used Crisco to grease the light poles in Philadelphia?
Yeah, so people wouldn't climb up them?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they did anyway?
They did anyway. I don't know if you saw this. They turned over cars. They set them on fire. Yeah, I mean they did $5 million of improvements to Philadelphia last night.
But so,
yeah. You get that joke if you lived in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've never understood though the setting your city on fire because you won the Super Bowl.
No.
I don't get that.
No, I watched last night. I tweeted this out. I just love dummies on tape. You know, I love people who are doing something illegal and they're like, here, give me a Facebook. It's not going to work out well for you, dude.
No.
It's just not going to work out well.
I'm glad they do it, but it's stupid.
It's wildly entertaining.
Yeah, it is.
Wildly entertaining. Did you get the feeling last night that this was the real life Apollo Creed, Rocky Balboa?
Yeah.
All the way through it, I'm like... Yeah. Tom Brady is Apollo Creed. He's the guy who's supposed to win. He's got everything, and here comes Philadelphia
with a guy with a second or third string quarterback who does incredibly well and pulls it out for him. Yeah, it was like Apollo Creed and Rocky.
So, can I ask you a politically incorrect question?
Mm-hmm.
What happened? I mean, Philadelphia. What happened with third string? What happened? Is this what's been going on? You know, they've all come together, and I'm not saying this is God making them win, but they all came together and united around something.
They did
bigger and better.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were just talking about this in the other room. I mean, this has been a really spiritual year for the Eagles, and it may have bonded them together in a way that other teams weren't bonded together. And I'm not saying that God wanted them to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
But for them being on his side, you know, it doesn't hurt, right? I mean, when you commit your life to God, good things are going to happen. You know that.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just thinking of, you know, Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Paul. Jesus. I mean, yes, good things all happen in the end, it wasn't like they were like, hey, I'm going to Disney World.
It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's not, Paul wasn't like, hey, and after they crucify me upside down, I'm going to see Mickey Mouse.
There were some good times in between, though, for Paul. There were some good times in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between the road and the hanging upside down. There's some good things that happened.
Can I ask you something? Once you've been crucified, doesn't that kind of all the good times
kind of ruins the other good times? Kinda,
yeah. You know, you're looking back on your life, and you're like, those are good times. It ended in crucifixion, which wasn't always the best. So what happens to Tom Brady now?
I think he goes to another Super Bowl next year. I think that's what happens to him. He'll be back for his ninth next year. And probably win that one. They just can't be stopped. The Patriots just can't be stopped. I don't understand it.
I would just like to remind you that less than 24 hours ago,
they were stopped. Yeah, but they were in it again. I mean, they have lost three of these now, but they won five. So they'll be back again. It's already eight in 14 years.
I'm a little sick of them. Can I ask you this? Did you have any idea how screwed up we were as a nation Did you know that Justin Timberlake is now known as the King of Pop?
No. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I
got the lecture of my life from my children last night. From Mary, who is 30,
wow,
all the way down to Cheyenne, who is 12.
But Justin Timberlake is the King of Pop.
Is the King of Pop. That's what they call him. Dad, he is the biggest star of our generation. He is our Michael Jackson. They call him the King of Pop. No, they don't. No, they do not.
Justin
Timberlake.
I can name one song.
I knew the one at the, with the
Bring
Trolls.
Bring Sexy Back. That's about it.
I don't even know that one.
I didn't
one.
Know the Trolls one because we haven't watched that.
Oh, I've watched Trolls, so I knew that one.
Wow.
Yeah, I watched that last night, and I thought, you know what? He's good, but I'm like, he's the King of Pop now? Really? That guy?
Wow.
The NSYNC guy?
The King of Pop guy needs to have better audio people because his audio was really bad last night.
That's weird because
you know
I didn't know.
Uh-uh.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I watched the whole thing. Didn't
didn't catch it.
Didn't catch it.
Yeah,
catch
it was out of phase and too low, and it was just really bad. The King of Pop should ask for better audio people, I think. Next time.
But I thought it was pretty good.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. And I did like the Prince thing, which
yeah.
I guess I'm not supposed
to. And
I liked
the thing when he went up into the crowd with a little kid, you know, that little kid's a star
yeah.
now and stuff.
That
you
was
know,
cool.
I couldn't help but watch that kid. He took a picture. He took a selfie. But then here's Justin Timberlake. The Super Bowl. He's on camera next to Justin Timberlake, who I don't know if you know this, is the King of Pop. And he gets his selfie, and then he spends the rest of the time looking down at his camera and looking at the photo, or I don't know what he's doing.
When Timberlake is right there next to him.
Yeah, he's looking
yeah.
at his phone.
That's how we
and
live
like,
now, right?
Right.
We
I'm
live
like,
through our phone.
Dude, he's right next to
I know.
You. This
I
is
know.
Happening in real time. I know you got your picture. How about seeing the rest of it?
Interact with him.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
That is where we are, though. I see that. You see that all the time. People go to Disneyland and live it through their phone. I just like to live the moment. I don't, of course, I'm not the right person for that because I never use the phone, and neither do you.
No.
So we're not the right people to be talking about this.
No.
But when you think about who else could there be for King of Pop, for that title,
we don't have to give that title out.
I guess.
I mean,
not.
Look, if there's
somebody,
a plague,
though, there?
Okay, if there's a plague, and there's only like 100 of us left, and Pat and I are the most talented. You don't name me or Pat the King of Pop. You just don't. We
I don't think we have to tell
time.
Anybody
there's
that.
There's no kingdom that must be given over once the last king dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just doesn't work that way. Could I ask you a question about the Trump investigation and the FISA memo?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I thought it was anticlimactic, as usual. I thought what did the memo really tell us? And now they're doing an anti-memo against that memo.
Yeah.
And that's probably not going to be a big deal either. It just didn't seem to have a lot of there.
So, you know, it's really interesting because I was watching the news and I didn't relate to either side.
Yeah, I don't either.
I was mm-hmm. I watched it on Fox and I thought, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to get some information on Fox. No, I really didn't. What I got was, this is the biggest thing of all time, and all investigations must end, and Donald Trump should be given a second term as an apology. It was like, what? Then I flip over, and the mainstream media is just as bad. There is absolutely nothing to this. This shows that Donald Trump is the guy we thought he was. No, it doesn't say that either.
No. It didn't say much of anything to me.
It did about Carter Page.
But he was under investigation
already
prior.
I know.
To
I know.
The campaign.
I know. But it only goes to this, and this is nothing to do with Trump, that you had Flynn, who was doing nefarious things.
Yeah, and we already know that.
Yep. You had Manafort doing nefarious things, and you had Carter Page, who may have been doing nefarious things, but he's so dumb that he may not have known it.
Oh, my gosh.
So it shows that Russia was trying to target exactly, let me flip this away from Trump, exactly the way they were trying to target Hillary, and according to the FBI, a vast number of people in Congress and in the Senate for Uranium One. They have a real network that is trying to infiltrate at the highest levels. That's what that shows.
And that's what we should be focused on.
Correct. But we're not.
Not at all.
No.
Nobody's even talking about that.
No.
Nobody's even worried about the fact that the Russians are involved
And
in our system.
And I don't think we're going to go anywhere with this.
No, I don't either.
I think we're both sides have just drawn this impossible line that it either means nothing at all or it means
everything.
Everything. What? No. No, this memo doesn't. Release the actual FISA documents. By the way, you know how they said this is going to hurt national security. People might die because of this.
What?
Can you?
I can't. No.
You read the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There was nothing
there was
redacted.
Nothing. There was nothing.
There was nothing to see.
There was no names. There was nothing.
Nothing
was
security nothing. Wise at all.
Nothing. So
we're just continually
so
lied to.
Why was the DOJ and the FBI so upset? Why did they say this was so dangerous and so reckless? What was in it?
They just didn't want it released, right?
Which kind of makes the case.
It does.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, coming up in about 12 or 13 minutes, only on the Blaze Radio Network, immediately following this at theblaze.com/TV. Or you can go to theblaze.com and just listen to it. Yeah, slash radio. Just listen to it. Hey, we're here for you, whatever way you want to view it.
Glenn Beck.
So glad you've joined us. Let's go to Minnesota and Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Mr. Beck. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you? Thanks for holding.
You bet. Hey, I just wanted to say, I wanted to preface this with, I'm at work and I don't listen to you very often. And I think it's a bit of serendipity that I happened to listen to you a while ago. The first thing I heard was MLK saying something about having a heart full of grace.
Yeah.
And then you talked about being honest with yourself. And you went on that line for quite some time. I served our country in the 2nd and the 75th Ranger Regiment. And I've been honest with myself ever since I got out. I've hated myself. I've despised myself. And I'm a husband and I'm a father. And what you said, you know, it's hard for people to reach me at a certain level because I don't want people to, because I like to keep people away from me except for my wife and my daughter. I'm not a huge people person. I don't like people, and I think it's because I don't like myself. I've never really had an epiphany moment in my life. I certainly never expected one from Glenn Beck. But that's what happened. I had to pull my truck over, and it moved me to tears to realize how much I can't stand myself and how much of an issue I have being the kind of person that I need to be to guide my family. And all because of the fact that I don't serve anymore. And I feel useless. I feel emasculated, and I have no idea how I got to this point today. I have no idea why I'm at this point right now, because I certainly didn't expect it, and I certainly didn't expect it at the time that it happened. But I'm glad that it did.
Brian,
I just wanted to let you know that.
I just have to tell you, you're not alone, brother, and I have been in exactly your place. I've been there. And it gets better. It really does. You just, now that you've recognized it, now you can start taking baby steps. And a year from now, you won't recognize how great your life is. Thanks for calling.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.